Well, it's got to that time of the week where we're going to talk tech. For the next 90 minutes, I'm delighted I'm joined by our expert, Fevzi Turkalp, from the website gadgetdetective.com. As ever, there are no stupid questions and hopefully no stupid answers. Generally, the stupid answers will come from me and the good ones will come from Fevzi. But we're looking for your tech questions throughout the next 90 minutes till about 3:30 here on 5 Live. You can call us now, 08085 909 693. You can text us on 85058. Email upallnight at bbc.com. UK, and we're on social media as well. Hi there, Fevzi.
Morning.
Hi. I think we're going to get quite a lot of texts and calls tonight all about the ransomware attack and that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Do you know what the latest is on that? Is it all completely cleared up now?
It's the main wave of it has gone, but we can't say it's all completely cleared up because this particular ransomware takes advantage of a weakness in various versions of Microsoft Windows, most of them except Windows 10, in fact. And if individuals haven't patched their systems, and until recently there wasn't a patch available for the Windows XP incarnation of Windows, then they could still be struck. So although that first wave has gone, it will still be rippling through, and it is probably still worth giving I hope good advice to people as to what they can do to make sure that they are as safe as they can reasonably be, not only from this particular attack, which is called WannaCry for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. but it will keep you in good stead against other things. So I guess the first piece of advice I'd give people is to make sure that you're running all the patches on your operating system. And if you're running Windows XP, we've spoken about this for the last 2 years, really, since Microsoft stopped mainstream support for Windows XP. If you're running Windows XP, it's time to stop doing that because it's really just not possible to make sure that it's a secure operating system. And the reason is that in April, 2-3 years ago now, I think, 3 years, Microsoft stopped producing patches for it for the mainstream. Now, people like banks and so forth that still use Windows XP in a good number of ATM machines, for example, they have been able to buy patches, but those have been, not free and available only to corporate customers. So if you can't get the patches for it, what that means is as these sorts of vulnerabilities come to light, i.e. weaknesses in the code that miscreants can take advantage of, then your system is increasingly vulnerable. So the first step is, if you're running Windows XP, change. You can go to Windows 10. If you don't like the look of Windows 10 because of privacy concerns or it's too different from what you're used to, then Windows 7 is still a good option and still fully supported. So as I say, if you're Windows XP or indeed before, time to stop and change. The other thing is to do a backup of your system. If you do not do regular backups of your data, and by data I mean your music files, your photos, your video clips, that script you've been working on for 5 years but actually don't have a copy of anywhere else, mm-hmm. It is time to copy those all off onto a separate external drive. So you buy one of these drives. They can cost £30, £40, £50. You don't need to spend a fortune. Connect it to your computer, copy those files across. Windows itself has got built-in backup software, or you can buy something more sophisticated. Back it all up, and then when you finish backing it up, physically disconnect it, and preferably do this whilst your computer's offline. And the reason I say this is the way that ransomware works is it secretly infects your system and then encrypts, that's to say scrambles, all the data on your computer, and only when it's finished scrambling it does it draw your attention to the fact that this has happened. Now, you're then faced, if you don't have an up-to-date backup, you're faced with having to pay a ransom or lose your data, hence ransomware. Mm-hmm. However, if you have an up-to-date backup, you stick the appropriate number of fingers up at the people who've done it, uh-huh. and you reinstate your backup. So obviously the best thing is not to get infected, but the ways in which people are having their computers infected and the way in which it's spreading, and we can talk about why it spreads so quickly perhaps later, but that means that's your first line of defense, but your ultimate line of defense is to have a backup that you can reinstate from, and that the backup should not be connected either through the cloud or physically. And the reason for that is that some of these infections actually search out any connected drives and scramble those as well. So once you've done the backup, physically disconnect it, hide it under your bed, take it round to your mum or dad's house, whatever it is, just keep it away from the main computer. And this is good advice anyway against having your home broken into and computer stolen, because if the backup's sitting next to it, you may lose that as well. Or similarly, if there's a fire or flood or any other disaster, you want to have the backup physically in another place.
Absolutely, absolutely. Billy in Bronsby talks to us. He's the first caller here on Up All Night's Tech Phone In tonight, the number 08085 909 693. Hello there, Billy.
Morning.
Hi, I understand you're having problems with a couple of upgrades yourself, is that right?
Yeah. I got a computer a year ago, and I upgraded it from Windows 8 to Windows 10.
Yep.
And the first three or four times upgraded itself, after about 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
I kept on upgrading, And then the last time it done it, but I got to the 100%, where it says don't turn off your computer upgrade
yes.
and all that.
Yes.
When I got to the 100%, I turned it off.
Yes.
Manually, which I know I shouldn't have done now, but
we've all done it, Billy, don't worry.
And I tried to get back on, I get nothing, just a blue light. It doesn't even reboot.
Right.
Okay.
So Windows has become corrupted. That's to say, one or more files that makes up the Windows operating system has been damaged, and that doesn't necessarily mean there's physical damage to the computer, although it is possible but less likely, but more likely that a file that was in the process of being read from or written to at the time got partially scrambled and now isn't there. So one thing you can try and do is try to start the machine up in safe mode, which is a Windows diagnostic mode. Sometimes it will allow you to start up in safe mode and the system will recover once you shut it down and restart it again normally. Failing that, you may need to do a repair of Windows, and it's possible to do. You can do various things. You can either repair Windows complete with all the data in situ, which is what you might have to do, because again, if you don't have an up-to-date backup, there is now in theory at least some risk to your data. But you can do a Windows operating system repair, which in theory, if it goes well, reinstates the operating system files without touching all your files sitting on the same drive. Again, if you have a backup and the repair doesn't work, you can reinstate Windows back to its original position. Now, in the old days, you used to be given a Windows disk and used to reinstate it from the CD or DVD disk. Nowadays, it's more likely that the original way in which Windows was set up will be stored on a hidden partition. So a part of your hard drive will be maybe partitioned and hidden, and that part of the hard drive will contain a mirror image of what that machine looked like either when it was first shipped or when you did the upgrade. So it may take you back to Windows 8 and then you may need to upgrade it again. But at that point, you'll be losing any data that you don't have backed up. So again, one of the reasons why we back up, Billy, and I'm sure you realize this, but for the sake of our other listeners, one of the reasons why we back up is not just because we get attacked from the outside, but because our machines let us down or we have human error, such as in this case. And in those cases, they say, well, back up your computer and then do it. But the problem is, if the computer's not starting up, you've got a problem. If there's if the repair doesn't work and there's the data on there is valuable to you and you can't afford to lose it, then another option, and you probably then need some help at this point, is to have that drive physically removed from that computer, the hard drive, and attached to a working computer whereby, if you're lucky, even if Windows is damaged, the other files will still be intact and can be copied off manually. So you look for the folders and the files within the folders where your important data is, and when it's sort of hanging off a working computer, you can copy them across. To do that, you normally have to pay someone, £50 or £75.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I've done. I when I switch it on, I don't get anything at all. All I get is a blue light for the one-off button. I don't even get safe mode or anything at all.
Okay.
But what I done was I took it to a repair shop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they tried putting, what was it?
A repair?
Memory panel in it.
Mm-hmm.
They tried that. It didn't work. Then they said something about BIOS or DIOS or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They tried that and it didn't work. And they told me it was irreparable. So what I was thinking was, can I replace the hard drive in that?
It depends
With a new hard drive.
Yeah. So
make it work.
I'm sorry, Billy. I talked over you. I apologize. It depends where the fault is. But Billy, let me ask you, how important is the information on the computer to you? Is that of vital importance?
Yeah, I've all the information on it. Think I'd be better just scrapping it, buying a single handling or something?
How old is the computer?
Well, the one that's called is only over a year old. The original one's 5 years old, and that's working perfect.
Yeah.
So I would like a newer one, you know.
I mean, this is a commercial choice. I mean, you can often take a computer into an independent repairer and ask them for a quote for fixing it on the understanding that there'll be no charge for actually getting to that point, so that you can say to them, please tell me what it would cost to fix, but please don't do any chargeable work until I say yes. And then they, in having to quote it, they'll have to diagnose the fault. If it's a simple... If it is the drive itself that was damaged, for example, if it really is hardware damage, if it's the drive itself, then yes, replacing the drive will solve the problem, although you still then have the problem of getting any data you might have off the old one. If, however... Pardon me?
I took a repair shop, I gave them a £50 deposit, and when they couldn't fix it, they gave me a bag so I didn't lose out on them. I think by what you're telling me, I'd be better just scrapping the computer completely and buying another single hammer or something.
It depends on the value of the computer to you. If it were my computer, I'd probably take it to another repairer and ask them for a free quotation. Yeah. And just see, because at the moment you don't know what the problem is, and it seems like the people you took it to may not know what it is either. What I was going to go on to say was, if, for example, there was a surge through the main circuit board, then that wouldn't be an economic repair, because that's the main circuit board and that's expensive to replace. If, however, it's just the drive, then it might be a good opportunity to replace it with a solid state drive, which is increasingly cheap and will mean that the computer will run faster and better than it did before. So it's a matter of choice, but I think the answer to this, as I say, is to take it to an independent repairer and ask them to quote for repair on the basis that they don't do any chargeable work without your say so. That's quite commonly done. Not everyone does it, but quite a few will do that for you, and they will at least give you an opinion as to what's wrong with it and what it will cost to fix.
Billy in Bronsby, thanks very much indeed for being the first caller here on our tech phone-in on Up All Night here on 5 Live. The number to call, 0808 5909 693. You can text us as ever on 85058. You can email upallnight@bbc.co.uk, and we are available on social media as well. Just when we're talking about backing up, Fevzy, I mean, do you recommend buying a cheap hard drive, an external hard drive, rather than, say, backing everything up to a cloud-based system like Google Drive, for example?
Okay, so there are benefits to both. The reason why I like backing up to a physical drive is because I personally like my data to be under my control, not on a server in the United States or anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had many examples of cloud backup being hacked. So it's another point of risk, as it were, for your data. That said, it has some advantages because it is immune to any local catastrophe. So if, God forbid, there was a fire or a theft of your equipment, then the cloud backup could be a complete lifesaver. It also has the benefit that it can then that data can be accessed from other machines. So there are pros and cons. If the data is very sensitive, I would not back it up unless I was encrypting it myself before I sent it up there, and even then I would think twice about it.
Mm.
But if, for example, it's your music collection or your podcast collection or something that takes up a lot of space but isn't really sensitive at all, then actually cloud backup can be a very good way to go. But really, I mean, the best thing is to have, there is a saying that says one backup is not a backup. You actually should have more than one backup in different locations. So a good strategy could be, if the data is not overly sensitive, is one in the cloud and one on a local drive. So, you know, because again, it is possible, and there are instances where ransomware has actually reached out into cloud backups and scrambled those as well.
I see.
Getting more sophisticated. They're searching for passwords and so forth that allow them to actually access cloud backups. But if a drive is not physically attached and it's, you know, an external drive, then it's safe as long as you don't reconnect it before you realize that there is an infection. So even with the backup regimen, there is a danger that, you know, the backups could be compromised. But unfortunately, it's our best solution at the moment, except to say the more backups you take and the more different types of backups you take, the safer you are. And it's a balance. Otherwise, we'll spend our whole life backing up.
That's true. Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it all depends on how much spare time people have got, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, it can be quite time-consuming, can't it?
Yeah, so there are automated types of backup. And although I mentioned that, you know, Windows has backup routines built into it, you know, some of the third-party utilities, so things like a software from a company called Acronis, for example, that's quite sophisticated backup software that can be scheduled to back up itself at set times or continuously. It can even let you reinstate your backup onto a completely different machine, which is a very clever trick that doesn't normally work. Or indeed, if you're using a Mac, something like Time Machine. And although Macs were not threatened by the WannaCry piece of ransomware because it was written to affect Windows computers, you know, Mac users are not immune to this sort of thing, and they're certainly not immune to being tricked out of providing their own password to their email account and therefore, you know, Mac users' money being stolen. So I think it's something that, you know, all computer users have to bear in mind, including ones that use tablets and smartphones.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We've had lots of questions on the text as well about computers generally. John in Shrewsbury asks, good evening, I need to replace my laptop computer, which at the moment he's running a Lenovo Windows-based one. He's thinking about going to an Apple Mac, partly because he's already got an iPad and an iPhone as well, and also he's slightly concerned about these latest security issues of the past week. He asks, what are the main differences between Windows and Apple?
Okay, number of things there. The fact that you've got an iPad or an iPhone doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have an easier experience of it by having a Mac as opposed to a Windows PC. iPhones and iPads work very well with Windows PCs, and don't forget that, you know, Macs and iPhones and iPads don't run the same operating system either. So that's not a strong reason. I mean, I'm not trying to put you off from going for a Mac, but if you do go for a Mac, that's not the strongest reason. There are some benefits in terms of you know, viruses and so forth, because Macs are about 5% of all the computers used, whereas Windows PCs are almost 95%. So being the majority player, they represent a bigger target. So if someone is writing software that's designed to steal in one way or another, then or hold people to ransom, then they're going to do it more for the 95% than for the 5. So in that sense, although Macs are not intrinsically more secure because they are less common, they are less commonly attacked. That's not to say, though, that they are in any way, you know, more secure. So, you know, that can be an argument to go for it. But still, as I alluded to earlier, that doesn't mean, for example, that someone won't send you an email that purports to be from somewhere else and tricks you into sharing certain information that could lead to passwords, money, and, you know, credit card details being stolen. So the other thing to say is it's also possible to run Windows on Macs.
Yeah.
And there's two ways of doing that. One is using an Apple utility called Bootcamp, where when you install Windows on it using those utilities, and then when you start up the machine, you get a choice of whether it starts up as a Mac OS Macintosh or whether it starts up as a Windows machine. Mm-hmm. And so that's quite a nice solution. And in many ways, an even nicer solution is to run a piece of software called Parallels, which is it runs Windows and indeed many other operating systems on your Mac in a virtual box, but without a big a performance hit. So the really nice thing is then you can then use all the gestures and swipes and benefits of using a Mac within the Windows environment, because Windows is running as another layer of software on top of the Macintosh software. So that's another way to go. But I guess the free way to try would be, if you've got, you know, enough hard drive space, is to use Bootcamp and install Windows on it as well. And it's a good way of doing it, because it allows you to make the transition from Windows to Mac more easily. And there may be, and there probably will be, instances where you need to run a particular piece of software and it doesn't run on a Mac. That can happen, and you know, so being able to run Windows still on a Mac is a good thing. Just make sure that you've got at least 8 gigabytes of RAM and as much hard drive space as you can manage. And bear in mind, there are rumors that there'll be some new Macs announced as early as next month at the WWDC Developers Conference from Apple. Uh-huh. So I think that's on the 8th of June. So if you're going to buy a Mac, I'd hold off until at least the 8th of June and see if Apple launch marginally upgraded versions of their Macs.
And make the current ones a little bit cheaper, perhaps, as well.
Because there's some new chips from Intel. So at some point soon, you will expect Apple to give their existing machines a little speed bump. It won't necessarily be revolutionary. Also rumors of a new iPad, although again, we're not sure if that'll be next month or in the autumn, but it's thought there'll be a new iPad with a 10.5-inch screen instead of a 9.6-inch screen, but fitted into the same size iPad by making the bezels smaller. And that's a design change that we're also going to see in the new iPhone that's going to be launched in the autumn, where again the bezels, that's to say the frame around the screen, will be much thinner and more like, if you look at, for example, the Samsung, the new Samsung smartphone, the Galaxy S8, on the edges there are no bezels at all. I think Apple is kind of playing catch up a little bit, but it's moving in the same direction.
Absolutely. Stephen Hampshire's asked about that. He's asking, any idea when the 10.5-inch or 12.9-inch iPads will be released? Yeah. So we're thinking next month, are we?
The earliest it could be launched is at the WWDC Developers Conference, which starts on the 8th of June. So there are different theories, because that's a software developers conference and they don't normally announce new hardware there, but there are some things that are sort of waiting for a long time. So that's the earliest. I guess the latest will be September-October. And it really just depends whether... Apple sometimes hold on to products not to upstage other products. So, for example, they may want their first bezel-less or thin bezel design to be the iPhone, in which case, you know, the new iPad might wait till October. It can also be the case that sometimes they have a problem with production yields, that, you know, they've got something working, but too many are coming up faulty and it would be too expensive to launch now. So, again, that can cause delays. But sometime between June and September, October.
You're recommending people ditch their XPPCs, and I suppose if anyone wants to do that or suddenly feels the need to do that after the malware attacks in the past week, they might be in the market for a new computer. Rob asks, could you recommend a PC for under £500?
Okay, so, Rob, the first thing to think about is whether you need a portable PC, that's to say a laptop or a notebook computer, or whether a desktop will suit you well. Obviously, the laptops and notebooks have the benefit of that you can use them in different locations, both around the house and anywhere you happen to go. The disadvantage is that they're less upgradable. The screen size is somewhat fixed. You can add a screen, but you can't replace the screen. If there's a problem with, you know, the keyboard or anything, it's an internal component. And so less expandable, less repairable, less upgradable, but more convenient. So it depends. A lot of people just still these days just use a computer at one location, their home. They're not interested in using it on the bed or on the sofa or anywhere else. They just want to sit at a desk, in which case a desktop computer is fine. Let's assume it's a laptop, because that's the way most people choose for the moment. So without going into makes and models, because there are good and bad computers in most brands' ranges now, I'll give you an indication of spec, and I mentioned some of this before. So in terms of the RAM memory, mm-hmm. you need, in my opinion, at least 8 gigabytes of that, and ideally one that is expandable to at least 16. So even if it ships with 8, check that it's expandable to 16. Increasingly often, as machines get slimmer and lighter, that's not possible because they solder the memory chips directly to the motherboard instead of putting them in sockets, and there's no space, and you know, you would have to unsolder it. So make sure you get one that's upgradable, or at least has as much memory, RAM memory, as you think you'll ever need, which, if it's not upgradable, I'd go for at least 16 gigabytes.
Yeah.
If it's upgradable, you can do with 8. Get one, very importantly, that's got a solid state drive built into it. So up until recently, all hard drives were little boxes that had spinning drives sealed within them.
Hard drives, the traditional hard drive.
Traditional hard drive with moving parts to it. Now there are things called solid state drives, which do exactly the same thing, but they have a number of benefits, particularly for laptop users. Most strikingly is they're much faster because they don't have any moving parts. They do the same job, but they read and write data far more quickly. So that means your computer will start more quickly, will shut down more quickly, and it will be far more responsive than one where, you know, imagine a record player where the arm has to come across and plonk down on the right bit of the disc to play a piece of music. It's the same with a physical hard drive. The head has to move across and seek where the data is and where it has to write it to, and that's slow. So it has that benefit. The other benefits in a laptop are that the solid state drive is not only faster, but it uses less power to work and therefore will give you a longer battery life. And because there's no moving parts, if you drop the laptop, the drive is far more likely to survive without any damage, again, because there are no moving parts. So there are many good reasons. Oh, and it's quieter and therefore also less likely to generate heat as well, which again will give you a longer life for the rest of the components in the laptop. So short thing is, haven't given you the long answer, always make sure these days that you have a solid state drive in there as well. Think about the screen size. Obviously, the larger the screen size, the easier it is to see things, but then the larger and heavier the laptop becomes. And one tip I would give you, because a lot of computers up to around the £500 mark have screens with, although they're a good size screen, the resolution, that's to say the number of dots, is not really enough. So if you don't have at least 900 dots in the vertical direction, if you like, 900 lines of resolution, you know, from the top of the screen to the bottom, that means that you're going to do a lot more scrolling around. So particularly when you're surfing the internet, and obviously web pages tend to be tall rather than wide, so you end up having to scroll up and down the page or your document much more, and that becomes quite irritating. So a common thing on cheaper laptops is a vertical resolution of 768. The jump to 900 or 1080 is much better, but it's always a balance, because if your eyesight's not too good, then sometimes the lower resolution can be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. Febsey, thanks for that. Those tips so far, all going very well. David's called us from Leeds in West Yorkshire. Hello there, David.
Hello.
Hi. You've got some situations with your computer trying to upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10.
Yep. I phoned in possibly the last time Fessy was on and said that I'd been duped by some false caller from TalkTalk after I'd called TalkTalk about a problem. Like some time later, someone called me back and said they were from TalkTalk, and I ended up doing all sorts of things with them on my computer, and Fessy pointed out that after all of that, a whole load of things went wrong. My computer jammed up, ceased completely. I lost control of it and stopped it, and talking to Fessy, he said the least of my worries was I'd had a 7 disc and I'd upgraded to 10, the free upgrade.
Yep.
And you pointed out at least my problems was like upgrading to 10 again, was all the everything that was on my computer. And so I've done everything. It went on, the conversation went on for quite a long time. And ironically, just after we were after the news here, we were just before the news then, and we sort of got seized up because the news is coming on. And so I've done everything about changing all my passwords and everything like that. And fortunately, because I hadn't actually allowed them any control of passwords or anything like that, it doesn't look like any particular damage has been done to my bank accounts or anything like that. But I still, I'm not quite sure how you said at the time I would be able still be able to upgrade using my 7 disc, still be able to upgrade to the 10, and and I'm not quite sure how to do that. I went onto your website and it says like that you have to have the license key to get in there, and I've been onto the download Windows 10 that it gives you the link to.
Yes,
and I'm still not quite sure how I get from my 7 to my 10.
Sure, David. Can I just ask a question? When you originally went from 7 to 10, did two questions. Did you complete that process initially?
Yes. And as far as I know.
And did you do it at a time when the upgrade from 7 to 10 was free?
Yes.
Okay. So, and the reason why that's important is because the upgrade from 7 to 10 is no longer free. You have to pay, and you can still do the upgrade, but it's no longer free. But if you did it in the first instance when it was free, then you should be able to go back and do it again. And it should be a matter of downloading Windows 10 directly from the Microsoft site, or you can buy a disk, but there's no need to do that. You can download what's called an image of Windows 10. You install it, and then it will give you various options, and one of those options will be to enter the product key of your Windows 7, and their database should recognize that version of Windows 7 was already upgraded to Windows 10.
Okay,
and therefore, you should not have to pay, even though you're outside the free upgrade window. The fact that it was done means that product key should now be associated in Microsoft's databases as being associated with Windows 10. So it's a matter of two stages, really, physically installing Windows 10 on that machine. And that can be done as what they call an in-situ upgrade. That's to say, without having to wipe the machine and so forth, it can be installed in Windows 7, and then when it wakes up, resets, it's in Windows 10. And then the second stage is, it will say, this is not a licensed copy of Windows, and then you enter your product key from Windows 7, and fingers crossed, it should then recognize that and allow you to continue using Windows 10 as a licensed copy.
Okay, and yep. Is that from the page that says download Windows 10?
Yeah. Yeah, and just make sure you download the correct version. Before you did the original download and upgrade to Windows 10, David, did you check the compatibility of your machine?
Yes.
With that? And you made sure you ran their compatibility checker, and you made sure that
yes.
All the drivers were supported and all the
yes.
The graphics and all of that. Okay, well, in that case, you download it and make sure you're running the appropriate version. Is it which version of Windows is it? Is it 32-bit, 64-bit, all of that? Make
yep.
sure that you're running you install the right version, but it should work, yeah?
Okay.
But I'm glad to hear, David, that you got over the arguably more pressing problems of making sure that someone didn't access your computer. You know, when you said to me, because I didn't give them access to passwords, but if you give someone access to your machine, controlling your machine as if they were at your keyboard, of course, in principle, they can access the passwords that may be stored on that computer. So, just because you didn't give over a password, and I say this for others, I don't want to, send you back down that road again, but just because you didn't give a third party your password, if you gave them access to your computer and the passwords were stored on your system, then it's still possible for them to be stolen.
Well, I'm really pleased I spoke to you last time. I'm really pleased about what you said about it all and how much you emphasised it all. I've been listening since this last weekend with this hacking thing, how much Radio 5 and Radio 4 have been doing on and contacting experts about how to protect yourself from that. I'm just really pleased that people are giving lots and lots of advice.
Yeah,
because it is terrible. You really feel
it's
infiltrated.
Difficult.
You feel awful about it. And there's been people on. I was listening to Radio 4 on the lunchtime program. And there's people there having to go to the doctors to get antidepressants and sleeping tablets and all sorts because they've been duped into information and all that. It is a terrible, terrible situation.
It's a difficult thing because, unfortunately, it's tiger country at the moment. That, you know, the number of attacks and the increasing sophistication of the attacks. I mean, what's happened really, David, is that hacking, for the most part, used to be spotty teenagers with no girlfriends sitting in their bedrooms doing it, but now it's organized crime. And, you know, there's a lot of money to be made out of ransomware. And you know, since the first ransomware programs a few years ago, the number of attacks and the sophistication of those attacks has increased. That said, you know, we shouldn't be running for antidepressants and so forth. What we need to do is, just as in the real world, you know, if we have children, we teach our children how to be safe, you know, not to speak to strangers, not to walk down dark alleys and all that sort of thing. There's certain basic rules that will help keep us safe, and nothing is 100% safe, not in the real world and not online either. But in the same way as we learn those rules, if we now, even as adults, learn the basics of how to be, you know, safe and secure, you know, online, then that will keep us safe from the majority of attacks. And even then, if we do everything that a home user can reasonably do and we are still attacked successfully, then usually, you know, banks and credit card companies will cover any losses that we may sustain. If, however, we've been negligent, if we, just as if you write your bank card PIN number on a post-it note and stick it to your card, and then you have two stolen together, the bank won't cover you. In the same way, if you haven't taken basic precautions on looking after your online system and your bank account is breached, you leave yourself open to the possibility that the bank may seek to blame you for being negligent, and may seek to wriggle out of its fraud guarantee. So but by doing the basic things, you keep the backups, have an up-to-date operating system that is still patchable, make sure it's kept permanently up-to-date with automatic updates, make sure that you have good antivirus and anti-spyware software on there, and again, you keep it up-to-date. If you do all of those things, then you've already protected yourself from you know, over 95% of all the risks. The majority of these hacks, David, come about because people are running older versions of the operating system that they haven't kept up to date. You can run Windows 7, which is quite a few years old now, but as long as you keep it up to date, set Windows so that it will both install and apply any updates from Microsoft on the second Tuesday of every month, Patch Tuesday as it's known. Set it so it does it automatically. Yeah, and similarly, same for your antivirus. The risks of allowing it to do that are small compared to the risks of not having
it, not doing it at all.
Yeah, because sometimes these attacks come through very soon after a problem is discovered, and if you're relying on doing these updates manually, you know, you haven't got a week to wait between, you know, when the threat is launched and when you protect yourself from it.
David in Leeds, thanks very much indeed for your call. He called us on 08085 909 693 to talk to Fevzi here on Up All Night, where it's talking all things tech until 3:30. Paul in Fareham in Hampshire has texted us on 850 58. He asked Fevzi, can you explain why the data on his main drive on a new computer, his C drive, is building up? He says he stores no data or files on it, but its total capacity is reducing over time. He says he deletes all recent files and history, but that doesn't seem to help.
Yeah, okay. So there's a number of things. So your drive, Paul, is used not only by you to store your data on there, but it's also used by the Windows operating system as a working area, and it may just be grabbing more of that space for itself. So there's things like you know, what they call a Windows swap file and so forth. It's possible that it's using your C drive as a working area. Also, you may not be aware of storing files on there yourself, but some of the programs that you use may be doing so. So, for example, if you use iTunes, Apple's iTunes software, perhaps you have an iPhone or an iPad and you attach it and back up, it will automatically back up your device within iTunes as soon as you attach the device. That, by default, will save those backups to the C drive, even if all your other data, you know, your My Documents folder and so forth, is on the D drive, which, you know, the ideal thing to do is have the operating system on the C drive and all your data on the D drive. And the reason for that is if the Windows operating system becomes corrupted, you've got a separate drive where you can mess about and you're less likely to damage the data held on the D drive. But things like iTunes, and it's not just a matter of iTunes, but iTunes will by default save it to the C drive, so you will find that can happen. You also need to make sure that you haven't got any programs operating on there that you're not aware of. That's the same malware or viruses. In particular, if you've got a hard disk light on your computer that actually flickers when the hard disk is in use, have a look. If it's still being, you know, used a lot even after you've started up the computer, and if the computer, for example, has started to slow down, those may be indications that the machine could have become infected. So make sure you've got anti-spyware, antivirus software, and do a full system scan. The other thing is you can actually do a bit of detective work, Paul, and try and work out what those files are. And you can do a search, and you can search not only by file name, but you can search by date. So you can have it show either the most recent files first and see what they are, and you can work out from what they are what created them and work backwards and stop that from happening. Or you can sort the files by size. So again, perhaps there's a number of very big files being formed. But it's often things like backups and so forth that you're not aware of where it's saving them. That's making the space. So a little bit of investigation, but it's not necessarily an abnormal thing, but it bears some investigation.
Worth checking, definitely. Paul in Fareham in Hampshire, thanks very much indeed for your text on 85058. You can call us on 08085 909 693 and talk to Fevzy between now and 3:30 from gadgetdetective.com. Kieran in Belfast has done just that. Hi there, Kieran.
Good morning.
Morning, Kieran.
You've got
Good
a problem.
Morning, Fevzy.
Kieran, you've got some problem.
To hear your informative and diplomatic voice. I have a simple-minded query. I bought a laptop a few years ago after years of rebuilding my various desktops.
Yes.
And there was a free McAfee trial, whatever it is. But I had bought Norton Symantec, yep, and installed it.
Mm-hmm.
And also the backup and so on. And it backups regularly and gives me a message to the effect that it is backed up every day with 48 errors. Only once in that time did it say that it had detected the McAfee. And I had tried to uninstall the McAfee after it had expired its trial thing. And every time I tried to uninstall it, it says I don't have access to it to uninstall it.
Right. Okay. So, has that computer been used by more than one user? Is there more than one user account?
No,
on the
I'm the only one.
Okay. So you should have access to it. If you've tried to use a standard uninstallation routine inside Windows and it's not and not allowing you to do that, or if it's not done it completely, then
by the way, sorry to interrupt, the reception on this phone for some reason seems to be rather faint.
I'll come closer to the mic.
Your end or what?
Is that better? So if you've tried to uninstall using the uninstall facility of Windows and it's refusing you,
it's the McAfee that I want to get rid of.
Yeah. So, but Windows, you have uninstall program inside Windows, so you can use Windows to uninstall McAfee. Now, sometimes it doesn't work, or sometimes it leaves remnants of the installation behind that need to be cleaned up. So, what I would suggest you do is try and run uninstall. If it doesn't allow you to run uninstall, then I would go to McAfee's website and look for a bespoke uninstallation tool. So they will have a tool just for this sort of circumstance where a program doesn't uninstall or doesn't uninstall completely. Sometimes, if you've already had a go at uninstalling it and bits have come off and bits of it are still there, sometimes the only way to uninstall it rather unintuitively is to reinstall it and then uninstall it completely. You know, the complete version.
I can't install the McAfee for the simple reason that it came with the thing. You know, I didn't I'd ever installed it. It came with them with the laptop.
I understand. There is another way, which is it's not recommended. It's something that I do, but I couldn't really widely recommend, which is to find where it lives and delete it manually, and then to use a program like CCleaner to clean up the remnants. The problem of doing it that way is that inevitably you get residue of it in things like the registry, which is the Windows system database. There's bits of it still there. I think the way to go is their uninstaller and hope that does it.
So, but what are the consistent and regular and routine 48 errors? Norton does the backup every day, comes back and up and says, backup complete with 48 errors.
And have you ever, asked Norton to expand upon that? Often when it will say there's a number of errors, there's usually a little link that will say, you know, detail, and then it will tell you which files. It can be that there is a corruption to those files. That's to say that some of those files may have been slightly damaged, not necessarily that the physical disk that they sit on is damaged, although that's also possible, but it can be that the files have been corrupted, and when it tries to read those files in order to back them up, it cannot do so.
So that's not a problem with the conflict with McAfee that it once registered.
Not necessarily. The only way in which I could anticipate that happening is if the McAfee was still active at the same time as the Norton.
Well, McAfee comes up every day saying, your computer may be at risk, buy now, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know? which is...
And I can't get rid of the bugger, if you pardon the expression.
Look, the uninstallation tool from McAfee is the best way to go, and sometimes I feel that, and I also say this about McAfee, but sometimes manufacturers seem to go out their way to make their software as sticky as possible, and as hard to clean off a system as possible, but they will usually... provide an uninstallation tool from their supports part of their website. Are you happy with Norton? Is it doing?
Yes, I have no reason to have any complaint, whatever. In fact, it was listening to your good self one night talking about Norton Symantec or whatever you call it, that I decided, right, I'll go for Norton.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it does the job well. It's got what's called a small footprint, so it doesn't take up a huge amount of your computer's resources. You know, opinions vary, but I think you're on a good one there. I think, you know, McAfee is still a good choice. There are other good choices as well. There's a company called ESET, ESET, and there's also Kaspersky. Those are all still recommended resources for that as well.
Basically, get yourself a decent virus checker and you should be okay, eh, Febsy, just about?
Yeah, and a nice tool to uninstall that McAfee.
Absolutely. Kieran in Belfast, thanks very much indeed for your call.
You're listening to a BBC Five Live podcast. If you like this, you